Thank you very much for that, Minister. And I too would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the lands on which we're meeting and from where we're all from, the people of the Kulin Nation. Pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are with us here today, and to note that their lands were never ceded. I would like to acknowledge the presence of the Honourable Jacinta Allan as the Minister and thank her for coming along and giving us a terrific overview, I think, and joining some of the dots, perhaps if that's hard to see, for those of us who are watching the massive growth that's occurring around Melbourne. As Chair of the Western Metropolitan Partnership, it is indeed a delight to be here. There are partnerships across regions in Melbourne, and so I am but one of the chairs of one of those. Mind you, I always think that the West is the biggest and the best in so many ways, and having lived here most of my life, it's delightful to hold this role. And I'll come to the partnership in a minute, but it is great to say that the government is investing and supporting the sorts of initiatives such as the partnership which do contribute to process in a whole range of ways that are very productive for the outcomes that we see occurring, as have been described. So essentially, partnerships in the Western Metropolitan Partnership is an advisory body to government and is comprised of a whole range of people, very significantly of local governments in the west of Melbourne, and that is a key focus of our work, is to think about connectivity amongst local governments and the way in which they work together. But also many people from community, people who of course live in the west, and people who work in other organisations, business. I can think of City West Water, which is now of course called Greater Western Water, and the contribution that will be made through that. Very importantly, I think, for us here in the West, Victoria University is also a strong part of the partnership, and I am very grateful for that involvement, given the very significant history and the quite unique contributions I think Victoria University can make to some of the issues that we face. Essentially, what the partnership does really is to really drive for social, economic and environmental outcomes within the West and to advise government on how best to achieve those. And I think it's important that our aim is for residents of the West, but also for businesses and those who move through the West, to make sure that there's a real difference to livability in the region and also the prosperity of the Western metropolitan region. It's quite simple, really. I think we do this by listening. Listening well is an important point to put there, by engaging, by thinking about strategy, by consulting, and by problem solving. And these tasks are not easy often to do, and we try and reach as wide an audience as possible, but I would have to say that the West has always been strong in this space, in my view, and we work well together. So we are tremendously assisted by partners such as WMEDA, the West of Melbourne Economic Development Alliance, and Lead West, and as I've already mentioned, Victoria University is a really key part of what we do. I think the focus for our partners is very much common to our focus, but we may come at it from a slightly different realm. And clearly what we want to do is bring the voices of people who live in the West, the voices of people who work in the West, to government for its consideration. And in some ways, I do think it's a bit like the old community cabinets that used to exist, where cabinet would go out and visit regional locations or visit other locations and really have a conversation locally about what people's experiences were, how they found living in the region that they live in. I would like to highlight today, to start with, really, what we've seen during COVID. And this is not so much to run through a list as to give you a bit of an idea of what are the particular challenges in the West that we think need to be attended to. And I think it's fair to say that in many respects, the West was one of the hardest hit regions by the pandemic. And some of the stats I'll refer to will give some testimony to that. The West, of course, has always, and I say this as a long-term resident, only living in the northern suburbs for a short period, but I've lived in the West for most of my life, and it's long been marked by what I would call structural inequality. And what that means is that there's always a sort of a catch-up part to play in the West. And so what we see with COVID is that some of that structural inequality that existed in this region was coupled with deteriorating labour market conditions, with retail, education, accommodation, food services and social assistance sectors being the hardest hit in many respects during COVID. So this adds another layer, a compounding effect, for example, on what residents of the West would have experienced and what they have told us they experienced, and indeed for businesses and those who work more generally. In this way, I think that we can learn from the history of the West, which is where I think of Tom Uren and the Australian Assistance Plan in the 70s and 80s, where both the West of Melbourne and the West of Sydney were thought of in terms of both the structural deficit and the need to keep up with population growth, with demand, with the way things were developing. And I think this is a really good model for thinking about the West, to take account of both these features. I think it's important to say that certainly our culturally and linguistically diverse communities in the West faced greater public health impacts from COVID, largely due, I think, to perhaps the lack of services in some areas, and certainly from our perspective on the partnership from language barriers. Health service provision for migrants and refugees required vary and do require, in my experience, not only as a lawyer but as a social worker, very tailored approaches to service communities effectively and enable community-led responses. And I think we have a lot to learn about things that were done well and things that we all could have improved. So that's an important part in thinking about the West. From my work as CEO of Victoria Legal Aid, we noticed a massive rise in family violence and domestic violence during COVID, resulting in higher impacts on women and their families when the restrictions were applied. Women were also more likely, and this is, I think, not at all disputable now, having looked at some of the literature that's now coming out about our experience last year, impacted by additional responsibilities related to homeschooling, disruptions to childcare. And I do note that a lot of the early economic stimulus packages did favour more male-dominated industries, including building and manufacturing. Now, that's not to say that shouldn't happen, but it's just a timely reminder of who is impacted by unemployment, who is impacted by these conditions, and how we need to make sure that no one really is left behind. And this is a very strong mantra from the Western Metropolitan Partnership to government for the West of Melbourne more generally. Jobs losses in the West disproportionately impacted younger workers, including those who are very vulnerable, of course, in the gig economy and in casual workers. I know that our friends at WMEDA have done a lot of work in looking at this, and that VU is very interested in this as well. But we cannot think of the future and not think of the future of our young people. We can say this as parents, but we have to say it as communities, and we have to look and see what's happened to some of the more marginalised groups of young people, perhaps from some cold communities, perhaps others, to really gain an understanding of what the impact has been. I think probably one of the biggest things we saw in the West was the challenges that were brought around in relation to people's mental health from the pandemic. I think this was significant for the West because we've known for a long time that social isolation and loneliness and health impacts, mental health impacts, already exist for people, but this was quite an exacerbating factor. And can I say the other area that I think is particularly important for us to focus on, recognising our acknowledgements at the commencement of these speeches, that Aboriginal people, First Nations people, have also experienced disproportionate, perhaps, impacts because of COVID, because of the other circumstances of their lives. So we are delighted to have seen really the list that the Minister just outlined. We know that there's big investment going on. And on to that, the things that the Minister has talked about in terms of transport and the transport developments, which are massive and ground-changing and breaking, I think, for Victoria, if we can pull it all off well. I would add the investment government's going to make into the mental health system as a consequence of the Mental Health Royal Commission. I would add the money, millions that are being invested in Jobs Victoria to support Victorian businesses and those who are looking for work and may fall foul of what changes the federal government makes in terms of support. And I particularly think here of young people, and I particularly think of women over the age of 45 years, which are both very vulnerable groups, as we know. And I also think most excitedly, having worked at the Western Region Council for Social Development when I was a young woman in my early 20s, of the big housing build and the $5.3 billion to that, and how important housing is to your own sense of wellbeing, you know, to your own sense of mental health and how you're travelling, and your ability to therefore often get work because you have stable, affordable, safe and secure accommodation. So some wonderful things happening there, and we're keen to work with government on those. Moving to 21, the Western Metropolitan Region has, through the partnership, has prioritised three areas. The first is transport, and we think that there is many, many big projects that have been outlined that are going to make a huge difference to the way in which we all live and move around the west of Melbourne. I think the research and engagement we've done with community members, and particularly led by local governments in the West, I think, which have always been strong partners ever since the Western Region Commission days, but I think continue to advocate really well both for their own area but also more generally as part of a region. There's still a need to improve local station access across railway lines in the region, improve public transport connectivity and accessibility, and I'm particularly thinking for older people and people with disabilities in that space, and improve the strategic cycle connections in the community. So it's great to hear the Minister talk about that as part of what she has suggested. Through our collaboration, though, we've also identified smaller projects, smaller scale projects for priorities in the West, for cycling connections that are more strategic, and exploring things like on-demand bus trials in the area. And this is because we think while the big picture is pretty clear on where Victoria is heading and where the west of Melbourne is heading, there's also now a need for much more localised, local, maybe sub-regional overlays to see how these things would all fit together. Our second priority this year is health and wellbeing. You would know how fast the west of Melbourne is growing. I don't need to give you those figures for you to understand that. But I think we're excited by the amount and the continued need there will be for infrastructure spending in terms of health and wellbeing. So watching the hospitals and community health centres that are gaining support. And in that vein, we have welcomed both Footscray and Melton initiatives. It's also important to think about infrastructure and what it really offers, which is services to people. And in the West, we do have a proud history of community-based services and services which respond to the lived experience of people in this region, particularly our cold communities and our Aboriginal communities in this space. So we're very grateful for that, and we continue to wish to support that work. We were, with some other partnerships, quite instrumental in the government's project around Let's Stay Connected, which also addresses social isolation. And I think one thing from the COVID experience that's going to be very clear as we move forward will be that mental health issues will remain centre and forefront for a lot of people, because their lives will probably never be the same again, and I think I can speak for all of us in that way. Finally, last but certainly not least, is the job skills and education piece. And I think, similar to many of Melbourne's regions, job losses in the West have disproportionately affected some groups that we would all be concerned about: younger workers under 25 years of age, and also including migrant and refugee communities. I want to particularly call out refugee communities, because that's quite significant, and women. And if we stop and think about retail, education and training, accommodation, food services and the social assistance sector again, we will understand why those impacts are perhaps so pronounced if you think of what happened to those industries during COVID. I also note that in these sectors there's a very high proportion of part-time positions in the Western region, which does account for about 32% totally of our employment. So I think that's something that we need to consider as well. The partnership is absolutely committed, and I know we will be working with our colleagues at WOMEDA and others about this, including Victoria University again, because we do have some strong ideas about economic stimulus initiatives to address job losses for young people, for women, for First Nations people, for migrant and refugee workers. And we do note that there are many stimulus initiatives that are going to create employment, but we often see, I suppose, particularly in building and manufacturing sectors, where there's not strong enough emphasis on what the targets would be. You can call it social procurement, you can call it what you'd like, but what the targets might be for recruiting into these roles, into real, ongoing, sustainable jobs for people who live in the West. The partnership, therefore, has a strong focus on social procurement, and we're very optimistic about the future in terms of the amount of spending government's doing, that we can make good inroads into that particular area, particularly in relation to airport rail and the new hospitals and ongoing investment in housing and social infrastructure. So, for the Western Metropolitan Partnership, in closing, what I would say is that our main priorities really cover targeted responses to specific health and wellbeing of our communities, needs of our communities in mental health particularly, and this is for both facilities and for high quality services for those who live and work in the West. Job creation and opportunities for those most in need, and this should be linked, of course, to appropriate pipeline skills and education understanding. So what are we going to need going forward? What does it look like? And how do we ensure that those that capacity and capability is there? And finally, in terms of the social and economic recovery that we need to do and the prosperity of the West through connecting people and places more efficiently via good transport. Thank you. Thank you.